This is the RDU on Stage podcast. I'm Lauren Van Hamert, your host, and on today's episode, I'm chatting with Susanna Huff, David Henderson, Matthew Hager, and Vivica C. Cox about the legend of Georgia McBride. When Casey loses his gig as an Elvis impersonator, he trades in his blue suede shoes for a pair of high heels and becomes a drag queen superstar. And that's the premise of the Matthew Lopez play, The Legend of Georgia McBride. Honest Pint Theater is producing the regional premiere of the play, which stars Matthew Hager as Casey and David Henderson as Miss Tracy Mills. For this production, director Susanna Huff enlisted the help of Vivica C. Cox, Durham's drag diva, to coach the cast on the art of drag by putting them through drag queen boot camp. Here's what Vivica, Matthew, and David have to say about that experience.
As an actor, I have things that I'm very confident in, and I think what this has taught me is the areas where I'm not confident and what I do and what patterns or behaviors are your safety valves, right, to deal with that. And I think if nothing, Vivica has been amazingly kind and a great teacher to help me learn how to walk in heels, but not understand just how to walk in heels. That's very a mechanical thing. But the idea of existing in that world and what that world is physically, it's not just about the shoes, it's how it affects the way the rest of your body moves. But even beyond that, it's like as an actor who spent a lot of time doing musical theater, I thought, oh, I can lip sync, I can do these things, I can perform these musical numbers. But it's not that. It's so much more an art form that requires a very holistic approach.
But it's also been a lot of conversation around the power that cis men have and how they've been taught to use it and how you need to dismantle that power, rebuild it, and present it in a different way on stage. And I just told you a really beautiful and floral way of saying everything is not just about your manhood. You need to figure out how you can be a human without that.
Mm-hmm. It's been interesting because I have felt more masculine since starting drag boot camp. Femininity and masculinity in many ways are very near each other in that there is an inherent power in each of them and being able to use whatever energy you put into the world effectively, that power is there and it doesn't, not that it doesn't matter if it's masculine or feminine, but the source, I think, is universal in a sense.
Society attaches being fearless or having power to masculinity instead of empowering everyone to look at a situation and tackle it. We tell society that it's only men who can do that. And drag teaches you that you now have the power to dismantle systems of oppression, to uplift your community, and do all of these things. And it's almost like you're expected to be the mother, the father, the priest, and the teacher, all in one. Mm-hmm. And that is why that happens in the way it does, and why I love this show so much.
I had to ask Susanna how she felt as a woman witnessing David and Matthew go through Vivica's drag queen boot camp. She said that watching these guys get in tune with their own bodies and tap into their feminine side was not only funny, but fascinating.
Large and in charge. I'm a dude, you know, I'm a man. That's how men are, and I know that. I'm married to one. I raised two of them. I know. But, you know, to have to watch these guys break it all down and get out of that and throw that away and embody a feminine side of themselves, it's fascinating to watch.
Just this week, Vivica made national news when she and another drag queen, Stormy Day, visited the Central Park School for Children in Durham. Eighth grade teacher Taylor Schmidt enlisted Vivica's help after several students withdrew from the charter school because of incidents of targeting, harassment, and bullying. Vivica and Stormy not only performed for the students during the school's Pride and Liberation event, but also spoke to the students about their own experiences growing up in Durham.
I will tell you this, drag gave me an opportunity to live my life to the fullest. It gave me the opportunity to create and have a space where I, as a queer person of color, felt safe and enveloped by community. We are empowering not only ourselves, but other drag queens who are up and coming, and also the community. And we talked about this at the last rehearsal about how drag gives a lot of queer folks an opportunity to have visibility and to see someone who is living their full life and is queer or of color or both. And it's so powerful to see that.
Vivica says drag helped her carve out a safe space where she could live her best life. One of the reasons she created the House of Cox is to provide a platform for other people to do the same.
Turns out there were a lot of other queer people and queer people of color in Durham who were hungry for a safe, inclusive, consent-focused space in their nightlife experience where they could just exist without worrying about harm to their body, to their mind, to their emotions, and they could just let go and exist. And as gay and queer bars are dying in big cities, drag has been able to help the nightlife community stay and persist. So yes, drag saved me because it gave me a home, but I think more so drag has a way of saving people because it helps us not forget that we still have a space and we're able to still have fun.
Vivica says one thing that might surprise audiences coming to a House of Cox drag show or even Honest Pint's production of The Legend of Georgia McBride is what local drag is and is not, and that shows like RuPaul's Drag Race have upped the ante for local drag artists.
The conversation around what people will find surprising if they go to a drag show or to learn about the drag community is a really hard conversation because it's steeped in a lot of history. And we are pulling off of concepts and ideas that were done by people like Lady Chablis, Lady Bunny, RuPaul, and Divine out of Baltimore long before we ever started our drag careers. Yes, we're doing that, but we're also being forced to innovate and keep up with RuPaul's Drag Race, which has filters and is telling the world what drag is. And people are no longer familiar with what local drag looks like. And I'm really thankful for RuPaul's Drag Race because it has given us more of a platform where people have become hungry for drag, including straight white people, are now very interested in drag. And that's really funny and beautiful because I will always take straight white people's money. Whenever they want to give it to me, I will take it. I kid, no, not really, I will still take it. But what you will find surprising is that not every drag performer is alike, which should not be surprising, but people are always shocked. And when they see me and they go, you're so different from drag I see. Well, yes, because I'm me, and what I bring to the stage is going to be me. But I'm also the matriarch of the House of Cox in Durham, North Carolina, and we have a lot of members, and they represent straight folks, they represent queer folks, they represent non-binary folks, they represent trans folks, they represent cis folks, gay folks, they represent all sorts of people. But they aren't required to carry their identities on their back every time they perform. That's not what we're asking of them, even though the audience might be asking them to represent their identities and everything they do. So they might be surprised if they come to a House of Cox show. But what I think a lot of people won't get from this show, but would be surprised to know, is that there's a huge pageant culture in drag. And pageant culture in drag really inspires a lot of girls to be as polished and ready for anything as you possibly can be. Now, is this show going to show pageant drag? No, not at all. This is going to be good local drag that makes you happy or sad at the appropriate moment or reminiscent of something. That's what drag does. It really digs into what you're going through and pulls it out.
There is a great line in The Legend of Georgia McBride wherein one of the characters describes drag as a raised fist inside a sequined glove. Vivica says she agrees that being a drag queen is not for the faint of heart, even in a city as progressive as Durham. And she adds that it is time to change the political rhetoric that perpetuates hate and intolerance in this state.
I live in Durham, I perform in Durham, and Durham is one of the most progressive cities in the state of North Carolina. In fact, we're celebrating our 150th anniversary, and I am in the promotional video that the city put out, right? What other cities in the South are putting a drag queen who is black and of size in their promotional video for their anniversary? How many cities are doing that? So I'm spoiled. I recognize that I'm spoiled, where I'm willing to call a Lyft or an Uber or whatever in drag, and the person picking me up is just like, that's a lot of glitter. And they keep on driving. I recognize that. But I also have performed across the state, and I have seen the other communities. I love Greensboro, I love Asheville, I love Wilmington, I love Raleigh. I know that these other cities have strong drag communities as well, and I can't speak to what it's like to live there. But I can say, I'm not always willing to go to the club in drag for fear of getting pulled over. What happens if I get pulled over while I'm in drag? You know, I'm still a person of color, so what happens if I get pulled over, period? But what happens if I get pulled over in drag? I think about that. I also think about the bathroom issue, and North Carolina is a hot topic, right? I don't understand why it's so problematic, because every bathroom in your house is gender neutral, and we don't seem to have a problem with that, right? So living in North Carolina is a quandary. And I think people like to sensationalize the politics here because some of us have lost touch with the fact that we are a purple state. And if you actually dig down into the voter registration of North Carolina, we have more people registered as Democrats than we do Republicans. And I'm not saying that Republicans dislike queer people as a whole, but there's legislation that has come out of that party to give us that sense, right? But why in a state where we have more people registered one way than another should we be afraid of our own existence in this state, especially since we have power and we have had power? I don't think that we should sensationalize the conservative rhetoric in North Carolina, because I think it only perpetuates it and scares away more queer people, people of color, and people who want to bring amazing things to the state from coming here. We've lost the film industry. We've lost so much because of that rhetoric, and I think we should just stop it in its tracks.
The truth is that shows like The Legend of Georgia McBride promote inclusivity and representation, something that is at the very heart of what community and regional theaters like Honest Pint are trying to do.
Regional theater and local theater is actually more inclusive than Broadway is. You will probably see far more diverse casting in regional theater than you will on the Broadway stage. Nonetheless, most of the theater in this country is still created and produced by white men. Yeah. And that's changing rapidly, really fast in the regional scene. Like, don't blink, because you're gonna miss it. So many, I'm talking large regional theater companies, have turned over their administration, their artistic directors are coming and going really fast right now. And there's a lot of people coming in, women and people of color are now being appointed to these leadership roles, which is fantastic. Broadway theater is a different animal. That's a different business. It's a different.
I think representation is important because I think people need to see themselves, see themselves in stories, see a story being told by somebody that looks like them. I taught elementary school for 3 years here in Raleigh, and I was the only male on the faculty my last year, and the base population of our school was Southeast Raleigh. And in my exit interview, when I left, one of the things I said that was hardest for me was that as a white man in this school, the young African-American kids that I was teaching, the young boys, I didn't look like them. So I couldn't, you know, I wasn't a mirror for them, right? And it was important to me that I say in my exit interview that that's where we're failing, is that the teachers didn't represent the base population in a way. And I think theater has to get to that point. Theater has to start telling stories of people that exist in our community that we have long ignored putting on stage or aren't able to find. Like, we're finding Brendan Jacob Jenkins, playwright, everybody's going to be done at Playmakers next year. This guy is a young playwright and writing some of the greatest plays with casts that are as extremely diverse. So it's finding those plays and finding those actors that we can use to tell those stories, to hold that mirror. Because if people don't see themselves on stage, they stop coming.
Yeah.
So I went and saw In the Triangle, Men on Boats, which is supposed to be an all non-cis white man cast. And this director chose to do all AFAB people. And when I say AFAB, I mean assigned female at birth. And it leaves room for interpretation and freedom of expression, if you use the word or term AFAB. And it was really interesting because there were people of varying colors, shapes, and sizes on the stage, and gender identities and sexual orientations. It was a really good production, a lot of talent there. But I'm in a group of brown queers in our little section, and then you look to the right, and it was a room full of 63-year-old white women,
right?
And, you know, a spattering of other people. And that was intriguing to me because it was a show that should have had a lot of representation and should have been inspiring. So I wondered, was there some marketing? But it was a phenomenal show. I work in higher education. I'm an educator, and I would take my students to see shows at DPAC. I work with low-income first-gen students, and I was asked, why don't we ever go see The Lion King? Okay, my black and brown students want to see The Lion King. Why? Because they're looking at people like them.
Yeah.
Well, one year, when I had money to take students, I didn't have access to a show that would have people of color. So I picked Les Mis, and I was biting my nails, not knowing how the night was going to go. And I will tell you this. My students left that not going, wow, that was amazing. They were going, in Act One, when she did this, it was quite mesmerizing. And I was going, who are you? Who are you? So people of color want to absorb theater. But people of color are not invited. They're not welcomed in to see theater because it's a system and it's a cycle.
Yeah.
And it's hard to stop a wheel that's already moving. I recognize that. But it is also necessary. We can't let anyone off the hook on this one at all. Because for me, watching movies where there were people of color, where there were drag queens, where there were queers, sometimes when no one was around and I would find the DVD somewhere and I would pop it in and sit in front of the TV, made me who I am. And that's so important for little kids, for young queers, for people who have not yet found it. A little bit of representation, a little bit of acceptance reduces suicide rates, it increases happiness, and it increases overall success. And we don't need to get into the statistics or anything like that, but we know that acceptance, visibility, and affirmation increases the lifespan of queer and trans folks and people of color. So why aren't we doing that? If we care so much, why don't we do it?
Susanna says she hopes audiences will come to The Legend of Georgia McBride with an open heart and an open mind, and that the show will help break down some barriers.
What I love especially about it is that Casey is a heterosexual cis male. He's white. He's married to an African-American woman. And the fact that he's finds his family in such an unexpected way through the queer community and through drag is such a beautiful thing.
And for me, I like to think of this as a bookend, right? A year ago, we were producing The Absolute Brightness of Leonard Peltke, right? Which is a story about a young boy not afraid to live his truth and how that scared some people in his community and ultimately led to his death.
Yep.
But that death and the understanding of this bravery of this child brought this community together. And now here we are bookending.
But only after he was dead.
But only after he was dead. And here we are bookending the season, if you will, with a show about a young man who is finding himself and finding that freedom to be who he truly is at an age where he can do something. It goes back to what Vivica said about happiness. Finding happiness will increase your longevity.
You know, Armistead Maupin, the author, talks about finding your logical family. And so The Herd was about your biological family. This show's about finding your logical family.
Susanna, David, Vivica, and Matthew all say that this show is about finding and being the best version of yourself, a takeaway they hope will resonate with everyone coming to see it. The Legend of Georgia McBride runs through June 2nd. A link to the Honest Pint Theater Company's website will be found in the episode notes. There you can also find the link to Vivica's website, where you can find out more information about the House of Cox drag show. If you like what you've heard today, please consider subscribing to the podcast, follow us on social media at RDU On Stage, and visit us online at rduonstage.com. Until next week, I'll see you at the theater.